This is a sermon given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website at saintdave.org.
So I first heard the gospel story of the so-called Good Samaritan as a child in Sunday school. I was probably sitting at a kid-sized table with a morning snack of red Kool-Aid and graham crackers, and I'll bet you there was a flannel board involved. I imagine my teacher moved the little felt cut-out characters on and off the flannel board as she told the story, and maybe some lucky soul in the class even got to help with that part. Now, what I likely learned from this flannel board lesson was that the priest and the Levite were bad for not paying attention to the poor guy on the side of the road. The Samaritan was good for doing what they would not, and that I should be good like the Samaritan when I came across someone in need. Perhaps this is how you tend to think about the story too. I mean, most people know this gospel as the story of the Good Samaritan, with the descriptor Good Samaritan even making its way into the larger culture in a variety of ways. What's missing from this approach is any teasing out of what good actually means. What, in particular, makes us consider the Samaritan good? And is good an accurate description of this person and what he does for the man in need? Now, good tends to be such an ambiguous and broad category that I'm not sure it is. I'm not sure it captures the essence of what the Samaritan does in our story. And Jesus doesn't use that word. In fact, the word good isn't found anywhere in this text. But the word mercy, now that is in the text. It's the punchline, so to speak, of the story. Mercy is the goal that Jesus is trying to get his listeners to embrace. Showing mercy, doing mercy. And not just to anyone, mind you, but specifically to your neighbor. Extending mercy is the key to being considered a neighbor. And we all want to be a neighbor, don't we? Well, now that depends. Who is my neighbor? In typical Jesus fashion, he answers the question with a story. A man fell into the hands of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A Samaritan, while traveling, came near him. A Samaritan, while traveling, came near him. Now, many of us know what it's like to travel. It's hectic. It's tiring. It's full of expectations that are often not met repeatedly. Interruptions to the well-planned itinerary are not welcome, especially ones that require things of us that we are not prepared to give. So that's the situation our Samaritan finds himself in when he sees this man in need. He had every reason to stick to his original plan and just keep walking, the way the priest and the Levite had. More so, perhaps, because this man wasn't even a part of his cultural group. He was an other to the Samaritan, from a culture that had almost nothing good to say about people like him. And yet that other, that Samaritan, when he saw him, was so moved with pity that he pushed pause on his traveling itinerary and gave the man some much-needed help. Now, if we read the text closely, we see that this help takes the form of seven distinct actions, seven distinct ways that the Samaritan responded to this man. Each one of these seven responses was practical, tangible, and concrete, and as it turns out, also required quite a bit of sacrifice in terms of time, energy, and money. Now, considering who the players were, you might call what the Samaritan did extravagant or excessive, perhaps even unnecessary. But Jesus just calls it being a neighbor. Jesus just calls it being a neighbor. The man in need is badly hurt, half dead, the text tells us. And so the Samaritan tends to his wounds, carefully, intentionally, bandaging them, but only after he cleans and soothes them with his own oil and wine. Now, this is an important detail. Oil and wine didn't come easily or cheaply. They were reserved for special occasions with special people, banquets, worship, funeral rituals. One didn't usually use them to address a crisis in the middle of nowhere. But this Samaritan did. They were needed, and so he used them. Next, the Samaritan put the wounded man on his own animal so that he can get him to the nearest inn. So two things to consider here. If the wounded man is on the animal, then the Samaritan likely walked, since there was one animal and two men. So he walked him to an inn. Now, not a Holiday Inn, mind you, with a free hot breakfast, and not even a budget inn, where you're lucky if they serve coffee in the morning. The inns of yore were few and far between. They cost a lot of money, and they could be filled with all sorts and conditions of folks, especially one this close to the famously dangerous road that went between Jerusalem and Jericho. But he took him to an inn. And once there, he took care of him, maybe rebandaging his wounds, making sure he ate, until, the text says, the next day. Meaning the Samaritan stayed with the wounded man overnight, as this inn was likely the only lodging option for quite a distance. He stayed there overnight instead of getting back to the traveling that he had put on hold to care for this man in need. And then, before leaving that next day, he gave the innkeeper 2 denarii, the equivalent of 2 days' wage, to make sure that the wounded man would be given anything he needed. Now, it's important to consider that he'd already lost at least 1 day's wage due to helping the wounded man instead of getting to where he was going in the first place. Lastly, when he finally took his leave, many, many hours after encountering the poor soul on the road, the Samaritan promised to return to the inn, perhaps requiring another detour from his intended plan, at which point he would cover any other expenses that the wounded man incurred while he was there. So, treating wounds with oil and wine, bandaging the wounds, getting to an inn on foot so his companion could ride, staying with him overnight, providing for his needs out of his own resources, and promising to return, however out of the way it was, to settle a bill for a man to whom he owed nothing, a man he didn't even know before encountering him on the road, a man he could so easily have left to die, no one would have blamed him. It's remarkable when you consider all that the Samaritan did for the man in need. He sacrificed his time, his money, his reputation. What self-respecting Samaritan helps a Jewish stranger anyway? And in doing this, he shows himself to be a neighbor. And Jesus asks us to do the same. Jesus asks us to do the same, to be a neighbor when it's not convenient, easy, cheap, or fun, when it takes you out of your comfort zone and interrupts your day, when it causes you to rearrange your schedule and reallocate your resources. This is the kind of neighborliness that Jesus holds up as an example we are to follow. Because the desperation we encounter in the world around us requires that. It requires that what we might consider extravagant neighborliness, excessive neighborliness, unnecessary neighborliness. But in the kingdom of God, it's just neighborliness. Necessary neighborliness. Necessary not only because the wounded man might have died without the help, but because this is the kind of neighborliness that followers of Jesus are called to offer simply because we follow Jesus. Now, this is a heavy concept. I know. I feel it too. And honestly, some days I experience it as a burden that I would rather do anything other than carry. And yet, when I pick it up, not only am I doing likewise in the way that Jesus asks me to, I am also coming face to face with Jesus and the salvific power that comes just from such an encounter. When I respond to my neighbor, I respond to Jesus. When I tend to my neighbor, I tend to Jesus. When I meet my neighbor, I meet Jesus. And I really want to meet Jesus. Over and over again, I want to meet Jesus. Now, in our world, there is, of course, no shortage of opportunities to meet Jesus by being a neighbor. Each of us probably has a good list of ways that we do this. The one that I can't seem to get off my heart, the one that continues to confront us day after day, the one that really is going to take all of us doing all that we can, is the reality that there are countless refugees, asylum seekers, and immigrants all around the country being held in detention centers and makeshift shelters and fenced in underpasses, experiencing conditions that are horrendous, inhumane, and absolutely abhorrent to the God who created and loves them. They are hungry, they are lonely, they are sick, they are scared, and they are our neighbors. They are our neighbors. There is simply no way around this. No matter what you think about immigration as a legal or political issue, the biblical narrative is very, very clear on this one. Time and time again, in too many places to fully enumerate here, the immigrant, the stranger, the resident alien in our midst, we are to care about them. And we are to care for them. Period. You shall not wrong or oppress a resident alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. You shall not abuse any widow or orphan. If you abuse them when they cry out to me, I will surely heed their cry. When an alien resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the alien. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as the citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And who is my neighbor? The one to whom you show mercy. So, what can we do to help? How can we be a neighbor to these folks? I have some recommendations. So first, one of our parishioners, John Burnett, who was present at the 9 o'clock service, he covers immigration on the southern border for NPR. And he's gotten connected with a place called the Good Neighbor Settlement House that's in Brownsville. And he is going to be taking a collection up over the next 2 weeks. We'll have a box down, hopefully more than one box. Hopefully we will need a truckload, a truck to take all the stuff. But there will be a collection bin down at the front desk starting this afternoon, I think around 2 o'clock. There is a handout listing the needed items that John will be collecting. and taking down to Brownsville at the end of the month. Also on the handout that you can get right in two places at the end of the service, on this table right here called the baptismal table, because it's next to the baptismal font. The handout will be there, and then there's some more copies right outside the door, right behind where Bill and I will be standing. On this handout, there is also information of how, if you're interested in sponsoring one of the women who's living at the T. Don Hutto Detention Center that's in Taylor, which is like 30, 40 minutes from here, you can do that. There's information about that. Being a sponsor actually doesn't even cost any money. And then third, Rebecca Hall, who is on staff here at St. David's, is starting a project to help alleviate the overcrowding at Casa Marianella, which is a shelter that for 33 years has provided temporary housing and hospitality for refugees. They are overloaded, overwhelmed. There are people sleeping on the floor of every room. And they need organizations to sponsor families, right? So that's going to take a concerted effort of many people and much resources, but we're going to try. So information about that is also on the handout. There's also a link to some fabulous prayer resources if you want to commit to praying about this. And there's a link to the Episcopal Migration Ministries website, which has gobs of stuff. So please notice, all of this is also going to be available probably just in the next couple of days on our website and Facebook page and other social media stuff. It all sort of came together at the last moment, so stay tuned. These are just, of course, a few ways that we can demonstrate extravagant, excessive, necessary neighborliness to the immigrants living within our borders. You may be more comfortable with some than others, and that is fine. But please say yes to something. Please say yes to showing mercy to our neighbors in need.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.